This episode is brought to you by Intuit, the technology platform that brings financial confidence with products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. You might have learned the recorder in school, but probably not how to navigate the financial world. Luckily, Intuit's on a mission to help with the free Intuit for Education program. It provides students with the lessons to learn essential skills, like how to build credit, file taxes, and budget. Check out their free resources at intuit.com/education.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
If you'll, gentlemen, would come forward.
There's this video from 1998 that is crucial to understanding what happened this week at Twitter when the company was upended by a whistleblower.
We're joined today by the seven members of the Loft hacker think tank in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
It's from the Senate Committee on Government Affairs. The video's a little grainy, but you can see a bunch of young white guys in suits sit down to testify at a table. They look awkward. The late Senator Fred Thompson from Tennessee was the hearing's chair. It's his voice you're hearing. Thompson, of course, was also an actor on Law & Order, and he lent a certain theatricality to the hearing.
Due to the sensitivity of the work done at the Loft, they'll be using their hacker names of Mudge, Weld, Brian Oblivion, Kingpin, Space Rogue, Tan, and Stefan.
Sitting in the middle of the hackers was a tall man with glasses and long red hair. At the time, he was 27. His name is Peter Zatko, but to a lot of people, he's known as Mudge, and he was there to warn Congress.
If you're looking for computer security, then the internet is not the place to be. If you think that you're an exception to the norm and that you have a secure setup that communicates over the internet, you're probably mistaken.
What Mudge said to the senators shocked them.
I'm informed that you think that within 30 minutes, the seven of you could make the internet unusable for the entire nation. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, one of us with just a few packets.
So that was a transformational moment.
That's Joseph Menn, who covers cybersecurity and hacking for The Washington Post. He started on the beat in the late 90s and has written several books about it.
What was going on behind the scenes is that people with a defense and intelligence background were trying to get Congress and the White House to see how scary this stuff was.
They reached out to some of the best hackers in the country, Mudge and his colleagues, known as The Loft.
They actually recruited the Loft guys to come down and tell it like it was and, like, not pull any punches.
To a lot of hackers, Mudge was an icon, someone who started out in the underground but went on to champion white hat hacking, making governments and companies more secure by revealing their flaws. His company went inside big banks and companies like Microsoft to find security holes. Later, he worked with the Pentagon's research agency, DARPA.
You know, through him, you could actually see the lineage of the whole security industry profession as it changed from, you know, a bunch of long hairs, of which he was one, in the 90s, to one of the biggest issues in the world. And Mudge has been there the whole time and has done well the whole time.
Now, 24 years after that Senate testimony, Mudge says he's telling it like it is again. Only this time, he's sounding the alarm about Twitter, to journalists, and soon to Congress. Mudge, Peter Zatko, is the whistleblower who says Twitter is egregiously unsafe, that the company is ignoring massive vulnerabilities and hiding them from the government, investors, and the public. Joseph Menn is one of the reporters who broke the story. I am not going to ask you to divulge how you got what you got, but I wonder, when you realized that it was Zatko who was alleging these things as a whistleblower,
Did you realize immediately the seriousness of the allegations?
Yeah. Anybody can attempt to be a whistleblower and can, you know, apply for it and file a complaint with the SEC. But I have never seen it done by any top security official at a significant company, let alone somebody like Mudge Zatko. The content of the allegations is really important, but who it's coming from and their position at the company, I don't recall anything like it in 20 years.
Today on the show, the legendary hacker blowing the whistle on Twitter. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
To get to the point where Peter Zatko sought federal whistleblower protections to talk about what he saw at Twitter, you have to go back to Twitter's reputation around security. Joseph was pretty blunt about it.
Just terrible. They got breached over and over and in embarrassing ways. We're talking about teenagers who wound up in control of Elon Musk's, you know, blue check verified account.
A 17-year-old.
Yes. And that happened over and over again. It was so bad 12 years ago, 13 years ago, after President-elect Obama's account was hijacked and some others, that the FTC investigated.
That's the Federal Trade Commission.
And they struck a deal with Twitter in 2011. And it was a consent decree. It's enforceable by the courts. And among other things, Twitter promised to have a competent security program and to test it and to improve it as the situation changed. They also promised not to mislead people about privacy practices.
After several of these high-profile breaches, including one where the accounts of Joe Biden, Bill Gates, Barack Obama, and Jeff Bezos were hacked, former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey reached out to Peter Zatko to see if he could lend his expertise. Zatko joined Twitter in late 2020 as its head of security. So Zatko comes in at the behest of Jack Dorsey, the former CEO, looks under the hood. What does he find?
Well, I think he knew it was going to be bad. Anybody could see it was bad. And I guess the hubris here is that he thought he could fix it. The worst problem is the leadership and the culture. Security is a complicated thing. You can't just put somebody in charge and say, okay, here's your budget, go fix stuff.
Joseph says you need buy-in from the CEO, from the chief financial officer, and from the employees who are working with code every single day.
The soul of most tech companies is the engineers. They're the ones with the best perks, the best salaries. They're the ones that make it go. And Google and Facebook and Microsoft fight over engineers. That's why you have the, you know, the canonical free massages and you know, oh, you can eat sushi and whatever. It's because they want to, they need to recruit engineers from one another. And what engineers actually care more about than sushi and massages is what tools they can use, how easy it is to do their job, how much flexibility they have. And Twitter is one of those places where the engineers have a lot of flexibility. So they can use whatever tools they want. They can have the entire source code on their laptop because that is easier than working in the cloud in a more secured environment or on just a piece of the code at a time. But that is in opposition to security. Security does not like it when everybody has a copy of the source code and that there are all these different tools and very little monitoring of where they're going within the network. So there's a natural opposition there. And one of the things that really comes through in Zatko's complaint is that the engineers were carrying the day and that security didn't have real clout.
I want to go through the whistleblower complaint. It's 84 pages long. There are sections that are redacted, but I've read the
the redacted version, and I kind of want to take it section by section with you. The first stuff I'd like to talk about is what seems like some pretty basic security flaws. There's a section that is titled, Mudge Discovers Egregious Deficiencies, Negligence, Willful Ignorance, and Threats to National Security and Democracy. That's, you know, not a light title for a section. What do you think this section of the report tells us about Twitter's security?
Well, the part that jumped out at me was national security. That was the first thing that got my antenna up. And so there are a few different pieces of that. One is that there are people have been and are currently apparently on the payroll, spies for other countries.
Zatko's complaint alleges that the Indian government had forced Twitter to put at least one of its agents on the company's payroll. Earlier this month, in an unrelated case, a former Twitter employee was convicted of spying for Saudi Arabia. Zatko's complaint suggests that user data could be accessed by spies.
This is pretty much your worst case scenario. There, you know, while privacy might be valuable to you and me, it's life or death for people in many countries, some of whom are using Twitter as their only major means of expression about what's going on in their country. And so in very repressive places, the information that Twitter has on those people, which can include not just their real phone numbers, usual email addresses, but clues to their physical location, what devices they're using, enough to find them and jail them or worse, that's available. So if there are spies on the payroll that have access to that kind of information or can tell others how to get it, and apparently that is happening with multiple countries.
There's a note in this section that says only about 20% of data sets are registered and managed. Does that mean what I think it means, that 80% of the data was just sort of floating around and could be accessed by those engineers or by, you know, various employees?
So this, you know, this is in dispute. Some of this is a matter of interpretation. But the gist is yes. The gist is there is too much free-floating data without serious access controls to it.
I'm also struck that employees had a lot of this on their personal devices.
The really bad thing is that all these things line up. So yeah, it is not best practice for thousands of people to have a complete copy of the source code. But what makes it worse is that Zatko says that 30% of those laptops, or laptops of the employee base overall, blocked automatic software updates, which is kind of like security 101. Because a lot of hacking in the real world, I mean, frankly, most of it is still phishing and old school stuff. But after that, it's not the spicy zero days, like the previously unknown flaws that the super genius found. It's stuff that is very recently found that they can automatically check for across the internet. People figure out how to take advantage of it, and they try it immediately on high value targets. And Twitter is certainly a high value target. So there are arguments about how, yes, some patches, some fixes can break something else. And so some companies, you hold off on patching for a little bit, but it is hard to understand how 30% could be turning those off and still be safe.
I want to talk about some of the legal allegations in this complaint, because probably the most serious one that he is making here is of essentially fraud. What did he say the company was lying both to regulators, but also to investors and the board about?
So it starts with the Federal Trade Commission agreement from 2011 and their promise to maintain, test, and improve a data security program. There was also a representation that they wouldn't mislead people about their protections. The main thing is the weaknesses in the security program. Zatko was basically saying that it was never competent because they didn't have serious access controls, because so many machines inside the company, including half of the servers, were running out of date or unsupported code that could be broken into more easily, because there wasn't a serious testing environment that simulated what it would be like to put out a product release on Twitter, so that you know, is tested in production. You know, they would roll out a new tweak to the service and then do it in just one country or one part of one country to start and then everywhere. But that could have security risks that you wouldn't catch unless it was in a big testing environment. So those sorts of things combined add up to a bad security program, inadequate security program. Therefore, goes the argument, Twitter has been lying to the Federal Trade Commission. Therefore, it was omitting that very material fact from shareholders and the SEC in its regular filings.
When we come back, there's an Elon Musk angle, because of course there is.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
One of the things that is striking in reading Zacko's whistleblower complaint is how he describes Twitter's executives repeatedly misleading the company's board. There is a note in the complaint that after kind of designing and implementing this big security plan, that Parag Agrawal, the CEO, explicitly told Mudge to provide documents that they both knew were false. That's a blockbuster allegation.
Yes, it is. This is something that rarely spills into public view. You know, there's a natural tension where executives who don't want the board, you know, crawling all over them will give them sort of happy brief updates and try not to get into the details. And Zacko felt that this talk was so happy as to be really misleading. So, for example, one of the things that stood out to me was a presentation designed for the board said that, hey, we now have security monitoring software in 92% of our machines, but didn't mention the fact that that software was reporting that a third of the machines were not compliant with security needs. That's, you can see the argument that that's a material omission.
Speaking of material omissions, let's talk about bots. In the seemingly endless back and forth with Elon Musk, bots have been a huge issue, or at least painted as one. The company represented in this process that bots were roughly 5% of its accounts and has done so in security filings. It seems like Mudge found something very different and some interesting motivations behind it. I wonder if you could unpack that for me.
Yeah, so to set the stage, Twitter has stopped saying that bots are less than 5% of the total number of accounts, and they've said it's less than 5% of what they call monetizable daily average users.
And that's someone who would click through onto an ad, right, or click through onto content.
So it's a human being somewhere, which means that your ads are actually getting through to them, and they might click through, or they might take other action. It also includes friendly bots, because not all bots are banned on Twitter. But anyway, they've been saying that's less than 5%. And Musk has been arguing, and Zacko is now supporting, the contention that that's not really what the average user experiences. And one other thing, the daily users doesn't say how often those people are tweeting. So it's a measure of accounts, not how often the tweets are. So there can be a real difference between what Twitter's officially attesting to and what the average user experiences. And that's something that Zacko is also saying. He also says the executives weren't even incented to reduce spam. I mean, I suppose they were in the sense that they want more users because more users bring more revenue, but not really. The executive bonuses are tied to revenue growth, profitability growth, and the growth in monetizable users. And so the complaint says when Agrawal tweeted during this dispute with Musk, of course, we're all incentive to do everything we can to reduce spam. Zatko says, well, literally, that's not true. They're only incented to grow monetizable users.
Monetizable daily active users could be really confusing to someone who doesn't think about this a lot. But I also feel like it's key to perhaps understanding some of the forces pushing the company in different ways. Because what reading this portion of the complaint says to me is that this was growth, growth, growth. That's what we want. Maybe everything else be damned?
You have to remember, it's sort of like the background here is that Twitter doesn't make money. Twitter loses money. And so they need to change that. And so it's not just growth, but growth in revenue and profit, or otherwise they can't fund nice things like competent security is the argument. So like it's a much bigger tension than it is at other companies that are rolling in the dough. Facebook and Google come to mind. I think there's much more scrabbling over the few dollars there are in Twitter security. So they know it's important. They know they should do something about it. They hire some good people because people want to work there. But when push comes to shove, the complaint clearly says, you know, the emphasis is on growth and money, not on protecting the users that they already have and what sort of experience they have.
This part of the complaint about bots has gotten a lot of attention because it could help Elon Musk as he tries to walk away from buying Twitter. If Twitter was lying to Musk and to the SEC about how many bots are on the site, that might mean Musk would have to pay less to get out of the deal. Musk's lawyers have already brought up the whistleblower complaint in court. But when you zoom out beyond Elon Musk and take all of these allegations together, they paint a portrait of corporate chaos, of a CEO, Parag Agrawal, who is perhaps deceiving the company's board and investors, and of his predecessor, Jack Dorsey, as checked out from Twitter's challenges.
Nobody can seriously argue that it's not completely chaotic and a mess. There were still levels of surprise in this. The fact that Dorsey, Jack Dorsey, who's brought in as one of the co-founders brought back in as CEO, you know, he's an odd guy. There, you know, that was kind of known, and he was also busy running this extremely valuable company called Square at the same time. What was not known until now is that he would skip a lot of meetings with his direct reports, and that he rarely spoke to people he was directly in charge of. The complaint says that Dorsey spoke perhaps 50 words to Zatko in a 12-month period when he was his direct boss before he got replaced. That's shocking. There's also clearly, like, there's overlap in responsibilities. One of the other documents that has come out that is an exhibit to the whistleblower complaint is a report on how Twitter fights misinformation and fails to effectively fight misinformation in many cases. And it said that there are all these overlapping responsibilities, that there's a site integrity team, but there's also a health and safety team, and there's some other team, and Zatko's people too. They all have some sort of claim over the issue of bots and misinformation and spam. And sometimes they cooperate, and sometimes there's a turf war. And it's just a real mess. And what's unique here is that it's a mess with global significance. In many countries, Twitter is used by authoritarian leaders or by intelligence agencies in some other country to influence current affairs, and we know it works. And now we have a little bit better idea of why it works so well. It's the defenders are just really outgunned, and they sometimes can't get out of their own way.
Do you believe what you read in the complaint?
I'm a seasoned investigative reporter, and I don't believe anything I read anywhere. But there's a lot there. And it's coming from somebody who has immense credibility in the field. You know, there's of course a raging debate on InfoSec Twitter about this, but the people that have been around for a while in senior positions are pretty much you know, they're betting that Zatko is in essence correct, that this is a really egregious security, but it is a super risky move to do this in public. So I'd say he's got most of the InfoSec community. It's the management types are saying, well, you know, it's a team sport, it's a team job. You know, if you're in charge of security, you have to figure out a way to work well with the CEO and the board and the people underneath you. And he failed to do that. And, you know, we could all go public with our complaints about how terrible security is in our own company, but that's not what the job is. That's the counter argument.
I mean, Twitter has come out and said he was opportunistically seeking to inflict harm on, you know, the company, its customers, its shareholders. What do you think of what they had to say?
Well, some of the stuff that's come out is pretty scattershot. There's a lot of insinuation out there that he's been in league with Musk, and the evidence does not support that.
His lawyer has denied that.
That's right. The lawyer said that there's been no communication. There may have been a subpoena, but it didn't go to the right address. They were not in league. And the big write-up that Zatko did after he'd already been fired was in February, before Musk made his move on Twitter. So that's out. And, you know, some people are dredging up, you know, Mudge's hacker past, you know, which was, you know, he was a hacker in the 1990s, you know, was he a clean school kid that never got into trouble? No, none of these people were. It's a weird profession. And so sliming somebody by saying that they broke the laws in their youth is not a very impressive defense.
Why do you think he did this? As someone who, you wrote two chapters about him in your book.
So the way Zatko tells it is that this is an extension of what he's been doing his whole life. Which is calling stuff out in order to get stuff fixed by any means necessary. And very often that means going public. That's what he did in the beginning, is he made these public assertions about software where the maker of the software had no incentive to warn people about it. So he said, okay, well, I will do it for you. I will tell people that the software is insecure and that will make you fix it. And that worked. He's also done other things. He, you know, at DARPA, most of what he did is still classified. So, you know, when it's important to not spill secrets, he will not spill secrets. But he says Dorsey brought him on to make Twitter users safer, and he's going to do it one way or the other. He can't do it inside the company anymore. He can't even try because he was forced out. So in Zatko's view, the way to make it happen, the only way to make it happen, is to file a legally protected whistleblower complaint that goes to regulators and members of Congress who can subpoena him, who can subpoena other executives, who can demand records and figure out whether it's true or not, and then force changes on Twitter, particularly if there have been legal violations. He's finishing what he was hired to do, which is fix Twitter.
If you're a Twitter user, what do you think you should take away from all of this?
I think a fair reading of what we know so far, which may be disproven at any point, is that users should have less faith that the information that Twitter knows about them will be protected from others. We should also bear in mind that a lot of this has location and other sensitive data. So if you are a privacy conscious person, you should be using two-factor authentication when you join Twitter. So you should use an app like Google Authenticator or something else like that that doesn't need your phone number for you to confirm that, yes, that really is you on Twitter. You also might use a throwaway email address to sign up for Twitter or change that to your contact, and then just have that throwaway, you know, email address, you know, John Smith, whatever, at Gmail. So just be aware that whatever gets tied to your Twitter account, it looks to me, is less secure than you thought it was a week ago.
In trying to assess how existential this is for Twitter, one of the things that I keep coming back to is how many times over the past decade, more, the company has been warned about security again and again, both by regulators, but also by, you know, people who work there. And yet they just seem to not be fixing things. Why?
One of the problems with security is that it's very hard to measure its effectiveness. So it's seen as a cost center by executives. You know, your chief, your head security might say, hey, we need this, we need that. But then he can't come back and say that, hey, this prevented five breaches, because you have no idea what it actually prevented and how much money it saved you. So that is why regulators have been paying more attention to this. The SEC has put in place more rules about cyber expertise and what you have to do and what you have to disclose. The Federal Trade Commission, starting because of issues at places like Twitter and Facebook and Google, has gotten more serious about enforcing privacy rules and what's disclosed about what they do to protect privacy. Directionally, it's going in the right way. But it takes a while before any of that is going to have the Wall Street impact of the same as your quarterly earnings and your projections for profit growth, or in Twitter's case, when they're going to turn one. So that's why it hasn't got the attention. And if it hasn't by now, I think this might do it.
I kind of wanted to go back to where we started, which is with who we're talking about here. You know, when Frances Haugen filed a whistleblower complaint at Facebook, one of the things the company was able to do was say, well, she was not someone who was central to working on this. She took documents because they were in an internal system, et cetera, et cetera. This, I don't know, this feels different because of who we're talking about.
Right. So this is kind of the opposite of that. Zatko is bringing less documents to the table, though he is sort of providing a roadmap for what government investigators might seek to get out of Twitter. But his expertise and his experience and his knowledge of the way things work and his track record as somebody who is willing to say the emperor has no clothes, it is pretty hard to find anywhere else in information security. He's one of the paragons of it.
Joseph Menn, thank you so much for your reporting and for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Not long after Joseph and I finished talking, the Senate Judiciary Committee announced that Peter Zatko will testify about his experiences at Twitter in September. Joseph Menn covers cybersecurity for The Washington Post. And if you want to learn more about Mudge and the other hackers of the 90s, check out his book, Cult of the Dead Cow. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell. Our show is edited by Tori Bosch. Joanne Levine is the executive producer for What Next. Alicia Montgomery is vice president of audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family, and it's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And if you are a fan of this show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. All right, we will be back on Sunday with another episode. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thank you for listening.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.